So the lines are blurring. If we treat cryptos like companies and their tokens like stocks, then it allows us to apply some of these value investing frameworks to crypto tokens that makes suddenly much more intelligent investing possible in crypto markets.
Get ready to jumpstart your week with the FCAT Crypto Brief, brought to you by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology. Join us as we delve into the hottest topics, from blockchain breakthroughs to DeFi revolutions and market happenings. We promise to go deeper than the headlines and deliver market insights you can't get just anywhere. Be sure to hit subscribe for your bi-weekly dose of crypto commentary. Quick disclaimer, we're here for education, not investment advice. Views expressed are of the hosts, not Fidelity or its affiliates. Crypto's a wild space, highly volatile, can become illiquid anytime, and is strictly for those with a high risk tolerance. Buckle up, enjoy the ride, and let's dive into what's been happening recently. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the FCAT Crypto Brief. I'm Matt Allen. In this episode, I'm joined by David Shapiro and Max Waddington. Today, we have a very special guest, author, investor, and industry leader, John Hargrave. John, gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Matt. Looking forward to it.
Now, John, you've written a book on crypto investing. You've really had a front row seat to a lot of crypto's evolution. Could we maybe just start at the beginning and what really pulled you into crypto and crypto investing?
Yeah, I got involved early back in 2013. I'm a geek. I've always loved technology. I had a friend tell me about this new thing called Bitcoin. So I researched it. I said, this is really interesting. And I decided to buy some. It was not easy in those days, Matt. We had to, as I recall, my wife and I went to our local bank branch where we had to send a wire transfer to someone who was willing to sell us the Bitcoin who lived in Belarus. I didn't know where Belarus was on a map. And so we held our breath for 3 days while this wire transfer was routed. But we did get the Bitcoin. And to be honest, I kind of forgot about it for the next few years until around 2017. And that was the first big Bitcoin boom where the price went from $125, where I bought it, up to about $10,000. And I said to my wife, this is the greatest investment we've ever made. Let's go all in. So my wife and I are entrepreneurs. We have a marketing company and had a diverse array of clients and said, we're going to now move and pivot toward blockchain and crypto companies exclusively. And so we did this. And it was a really great business for like 3 months. And then what happened was the price of Bitcoin crashed. And all of these new clients just dried up overnight. And it was a really, really difficult period for us. We almost lost the business. We almost lost it all. But over the next few years, we built it all back. We built our portfolio back, our business back. Today, it's stronger than ever. And what we learned from that experience was the power of diversification and the importance of not putting all your eggs in the Bitcoin basket, but still to invest in this new asset class in a way that honors diversification. And that has been the message that I have been passionate about bringing out to everyone ever since.
Yeah, we certainly can't harp on this necessity of diversification too much on this podcast, that's for sure. But during that time, you know, you almost lost the business, you almost lost everything. I think a lot of people would have just packed up and left the space. What kept you involved and what kept you a believer?
A lot of people did. And I remember feeling so disappointed by all of these fair weather friends to crypto who kind of came along for this journey. And then as soon as things got tough, they got going. One of the things was finding a like-minded group of people and starting to build this community here in Boston, where I live. And we eventually formed that into the trade association called the Boston Blockchain Association. Fidelity has been a great partner to our association over the years, which we really appreciate. And that has served not only to build all of these great relationships and friendships among people that are in this space, but also to help advocate for building the industry in our local area and nationally and globally in a way that is right, is compliant, and that is really in keeping with the long-term interests of the companies that are building in this space. So that has been a really, really helpful kind of community to have as crypto has gone through its inevitable cycles. And I'm just really proud of what the BBA has built.
Yeah, I mean, without having that community, it is so difficult to sometimes pick your eyes up off the screen and the red in your portfolio and really stay with your conviction, your original investment thesis. Can you talk a little bit about what the BBA does, what functions it serves for those who may not be familiar?
Yeah, so it is around advocacy, it's around connecting, and it's around education. So the advocacy is obviously bringing this industry to lawmakers, to industry leaders, and helping, again, build it in a way that is compliant with regulations as they evolve. There is building community. So we have a lot of different events throughout the year, including some that are supported by Fidelity and FCAT. And that is really valuable, again, just for making valuable professional relationships and friendships. And then education. So it's bringing just better understanding of this blockchain technology and crypto as an asset class more broadly to everyone so that we can build this in a way that's not just good for Boston, good for New England, but good for the world.
I find that no matter what time of year, no matter what Bitcoin's price is at, there's always a really good community at the Boston blockchain events. Almost everyone I talk to mentions some sort of friend, family member, colleague in their, you know, had something to do with their crypto journey. I'm sure a lot of us can relate to that. And I think, you know, the Boston Blockchain Association is almost perfectly suited for that type of collaboration. So yeah, we're definitely very appreciative of everything the BBA does, especially from the research side, a lot of the education that you guys focus on. I assume that had some inspiration in what led you ultimately to write your book, The Intelligent Crypto Investor, but I could be wrong. John, what made you make that decision?
Well, thank you for those kind words. I saw that people had these opposite reactions to Bitcoin and to crypto more broadly. Many people were all in, and many people were not in at all. So on one hand, you had people who were so excited about it that they made these all-in bets on Bitcoin, crypto. I said, I went too far in that direction at the beginning. And then there's this inevitable fallout when, you know, the cycle turns. On the other side, you have many people who are opposed to crypto because they associate it with unsavory things and so on. They just don't have the education and often don't have the curiosity to learn more about it. And it seemed to me that the better way was the way of moderation. It was a middle path between these two extremes. And so the idea that I started to develop with my team was, why don't we take a traditional investing portfolio, let's say 60% stocks, 40% bonds. And what if we allocate just a very small slice to crypto? So let's just say 2.5% to Bitcoin. So in my previous book in 2018, we published that portfolio approach. We called it the Baby Believer portfolio. And then we said, well, what if you wanted to do a little more? Perhaps you could do up to 10% Bitcoin or crypto. So I think we made it 5% Bitcoin, 5% Ethereum, and we call that the Big Believer portfolio. And then we track the performance of those three portfolios, the non-believer, which is just traditional stocks, bonds, the 2.5% Bitcoin baby believer, and then the up to 10% big believer. And our latest quarterly results show that the big believer has outperformed the non-believer by 55%. Now, most people would be thrilled to outperform traditional markets by 5%, 10%, and it's been 55% without adding a lot of additional risk. That's the key piece here, is even if Bitcoin goes to zero tomorrow, you've lost at most 10% of your portfolio. So that's what we mean by the power of diversification and how ordinary investors can try implementing that within their own investing strategies.
Yeah, I love that approach. It's really thinking about your risk-adjusted returns as opposed to just returns alone, which I think, you know, that approach combined with the title of your book, right? It really brings forward a lot of connections to value investing. And I've certainly spoken to a fair number of proclaimed value investors who believe that investing in crypto does not fit the philosophy of value investing in the slightest. Can you maybe talk through how value investing principles can be applied to investing in crypto and digital assets?
Sure. The grandfather of value investing, of course, is Ben Graham and his classic book, The Intelligent Investor, from which my book, The Intelligent Crypto Investor, takes its name. And, you know, at its core, value investing was about, let's go find great companies that hopefully are trading at a fair price, so they're a good value, and then let's hold on to them for the long term. At its core, those simple principles can absolutely be applied to crypto assets. Now, to do that, it's really key to think about cryptos like companies. So to be clear, legally, they're different. Legally, cryptos and companies are two different things. But conceptually, they're similar. And it's very clear to me that this is the way investors already think about cryptos. You know, we have ticker symbols, for example, and increasingly cryptos are being wrapped up in traditional financial instruments like ETFs. Some traditional companies also have a token and so on and so forth. So the lines are blurring. But the key sort of thing to get your head around is if we treat cryptos like companies and their tokens like stocks, then it allows us to apply some of these value investing frameworks to crypto tokens. And that's the key unlock that makes suddenly much more intelligent investing possible in crypto markets.
So what are the important metrics that you look for when you're evaluating a crypto token and trying to look at it like a stock? Like, are you interested in cash flows that are generated by the networks? Or, and like, how do you look at tokens like Bitcoin that may not have cash flows?
So with traditional value investing, the challenge that some people have is, well, you can't apply the same frameworks. There is no real PE ratio, for example, with crypto. So we take a broader look at it and think about it in two buckets. So one would be the quantitative, the numbers, and the other would be the qualitative or the judgment, which is how value investors think about analyzing traditional public companies. So on the quantitative side, we look at what we call the three Ps, which is people, profits, and price. So people would be essentially monthly active users. It's the number of customers of the company, the number of people who are using a specific crypto token or network. Now, here, cryptos have a huge advantage over traditional public companies. If you want to know how many users that Meta has, for example, or Apple, you got to wait till the quarterly reports come out. And by then, it's months after the fact. But with crypto, you can see it real time. You can actually see how many users are using a given crypto network because of the power of this blockchain technology. So that's a huge boon for investors. And what we generally want to see is that number going up over time. It's really hard to fake that number for a long period of time, so a year or more. That's people. Profits would be the revenues or fees that a crypto company is generating. Again, that is very easy to see using tools like Token Terminal, for example. And then the third P is price. And that is, given this company's fundamentals, what is the valuation? And I think most crypto investors focus on just that one metric. They just look at price. But obviously, price needs to be looked at within the context of the other P's. That's the quantitative side. On the qualitative side, we have a tool called the Crypto Investor Scorecard. This is a free tool that has been academically published and peer reviewed. And it works a little bit like a traditional stock analyst would look at a company. So it's broken into five sections where you answer a number of questions about the specific crypto company, and you give it a 1 to 5 star rating on each one of these. So we look at the market. So what market does this crypto serve? Is it large? Is it growing? We look at the competitive advantage. So do they have a moat? We look at the team. So who makes up the management team for this? Are they trustworthy, reliable? Or if it's a decentralized crypto, then what does the governance team look like? And can they actually get stuff done? We look at the token mechanics, which is how the actual token itself is created and whether that's good for investors. And then finally, we look at user adoption. How are they going to grow users or customers in the future? And then you average up the scores that you give for each one of these sections, and you get a 1 to 5 star rating for the overall quality of that. And what's valuable about this tool is it lets us compare very different types of crypto companies against each other, apples to apples, using a simple 1 to 5 star rating, kind of like a Yelp review.
My personal opinion is that scorecard component, or like the equity style report, John, correct me if you think otherwise, but I think it's becoming even more important for investors, given the trend that we're seeing, and I've written about it briefly, which is kind of the digital asset structure and like mechanisms are just prioritizing token holders more and more over time and looking a lot more like your typical equity, which allows you to apply these frameworks like more accurately and more confidently. For some anecdotal evidence, we've done an institutional investor survey for the past 5 years. One of the questions we ask our prospects or clients is, if you're not invested, why not, right? What's the reason? There was always valuation that would come up as kind of the middling to bottom answer, and it has steadily declined year over year because I think investors are wrapping their heads around what kind of models and frameworks we're using, like yours, John. But also on the other side, it's like digital assets as an industry is kind of waking up to being more transparent and making it easier for investors to understand what's the actual business case and making that presentable.
And thinking of them like investors. Remember, we've come out of this regulatory climate where everyone was afraid to call them investments. We came up with all this complicated language around how to talk about token holders as something else. But this is good for investors, for the companies or the tokens themselves to think about their stakeholders as investors, because you're right. Then you start thinking about how do we make this A, more transparent, but B, more investor friendly? How do we make it more fair for investors over the long haul? Because they're starting to realize we have to have these investors who are invested literally over a long period of time if we want to make this an ongoing enterprise. So yes, I think that whole discipline of research, crypto investor research, is really in its nascent form right now. And I think that's going to grow to be just an enormous service, and also one that will benefit investors as a whole.
I couldn't agree more. And I think something that is often touched on but not widely understood is token design and how that affects valuation. And I know that's an entire rabbit hole that we could probably spend maybe the next hour discussing. But just for our audience, could you maybe quickly and at a high level go over how you think about token design and how maybe readers of your book and intelligent crypto investors can think about token design?
Yeah, the very simplest analogy, we call it magic pie. And so if you imagine all the tokens of a crypto company, like all the shares of a public company, as being one pie, and let's say there's 100 tokens, and let's say you own 10 of those, so you own 10% of the company. But let's say, because it's very easy to generate, manufacture, or mint new tokens, right? It's just a few lines of code, that this company over the next few years now has 1,000 tokens. The magic pie has grown 10x, but you still have your initial 10 tokens. You've gone from owning 10% of the company to owning 1% of the company. It's basically dilution of your investment. And this kind of thing happens all the time. And almost no one is aware of this or really pays attention to it. Conversely, you have other crypto companies that intentionally burn or destroy or get rid of tokens. So they're shrinking the pie. So recently, Hyperliquid is one, for example, that they intentionally burn or destroy parts of their overall token pool as they earn revenue. So that has the net effect of making your proportional slice of the pie bigger. So in theory, you own more, and assuming the token price stays the same or goes up, the value of your holdings increase. So first of all, it is incumbent on the company to think through those tokenomics carefully, and then also to explain them in a way to investors that's transparent and ordinary people can actually understand, as I'm trying to do right now. And then it's incumbent on investors to be aware of that and do the best they can to see, okay, is this company inflationary in their token design or deflationary?
I think that breaks it down very well. But David, I'll pass it off to you.
Yeah, one thing that I think about is, as well as token supply, is token distribution. So where all of the tokens reside, and are they locked up? Are they with investors who have a lockup period? You're able to sell at a certain date. So is this something that you think that crypto investors should be looking at, is token distributions? And do you talk about it in your book?
Absolutely. And this is very much like stock lockup periods, for example, in a traditional company, where employees are prohibited from selling shares for a set period of time so as not to depress the price, for example, and to make sure they're motivated. So these are all the classic questions that we've wrestled with for years with traditional company design, but they're now applied to crypto companies. And sometimes I feel like we're learning all the same lessons again. But yes, you don't want an unfair balance of someone owning 80% of the pie, or a cohort of people. And this is especially important in these decentralized protocols where you have some kind of governance rules that are bound by the people who own the most tokens, because then they can very easily tilt decisions that are made in favor of their own self-interest and not necessarily what's in the interest of the whole. So again, very similar challenges we've had with people trying to buy up all the shares in a company so that they can then have an outsized voting share on the direction of the company. We don't want that to happen in our crypto companies that we're investing in, if possible.
Do you have any thoughts on how to navigate situations where there's a company with a token, but then the company also has shareholders and it's unclear of where you should accrete value to, whether the shareholders of that company should take priority over the token holders, and how token investors can navigate situations like that?
I think that's a really messy dual governance structure for which there is very little precedent to date. So I would tend to avoid those types of setups. I think that if we have a company with a tokenized stock, so in other words, traditional stock that has also been converted into a token, but the token represents one-to-one shares of stock that are being held and can be redeemed for shares, I think that's a cleaner structure, because then it's really clear that you've got essentially one set of shareholders, but the channel in which they're being bought and sold is just different, traditional versus more crypto native. I think that's a cleaner structure and the one that I would argue for going forward.
One recurring issue that I've personally had is dealing with the uniqueness of the thousands and millions of businesses and applications that, you know, have a token. And, you know, going through each one, like the scorecard approach is basically required to fully understand all the specifics of each token or business, right? It's very important. They're not all the same. It's almost the exact opposite of like the equity space, right? John, I'm curious if you think we get ultimately to like a standard, maybe not a standard across every type of asset, right? Like layer ones might have their own unique structure that's standardized, separate from exchanges, separate from other types of businesses. But I'm curious if you think we eventually stumble upon the right structure or a standardized structure.
Yeah, it's a great point, Max. And I think that just as companies come in all shapes and sizes, so do cryptos. And I'm a professional simplifier. What I try to do with my book is simplify all of this for, you know, the ordinary investor, the average investor, to first of all, understand what it's all about, but then also to give simplified models or frameworks to think about them going forward, while at the same time understanding that we are still early in this space and there's a lot of experimentation still going on. So we can't see all the ways that this will play out and all the different types of companies that will eventually emerge. We're far enough into it that we can start to develop some basic principles for investing. And that's really what I'm after, is let's find those investing principles that we can apply to a wide variety of different companies and projects. And let's try to keep it as simple as we can so we can empower investors to actually go out, do a little bit of research themselves, and then make more informed, more intelligent decisions.
Love that.
We've talked a lot about how to evaluate crypto tokens, crypto companies, both on a quantitative and qualitative front. But I'm also curious, do you have a risk framework for the way that you think about maybe idiosyncratic risks and then market risks within crypto investing?
Well, the basic risk framework, as I've explained from the beginning, is diversification. And I think that's the very easy risk framework that everyone can follow. I think that if we are limiting our crypto investments to a slice of the pie of our overall investment strategy, we are by nature then limiting all of the risks that come with that. So this could be a protocol risk. It could be a smart contract bug. And then at the larger macro level, it could be market risks. It could be just the ongoing volatility of crypto, which we're experiencing even today as we record this. So by limiting and diversifying as a whole, investors can really help mitigate that risk in just a very easy, common sense way. In the book, we spend a few chapters just talking about how to set up this very simple framework. And it does not take long, maybe a couple hours, to set this up and put it on a monthly dollar cost averaging withdrawal from your bank account so that you can continue investing in this simple portfolio approach that we've discussed.
I think not only is that a great way to handle risk, but also a great way to handle the emotional roller coaster that can come with investing and wading through volatility in the market.
Totally. Totally. Our greatest enemy is our own minds. And I have seen this movie so many times before where people get excited about crypto. They go all in, or they buy a specific token that, you know, they saw a YouTube video about. And then the token crashes, and then they say, I never want to do this again. And there really is a better approach, this approach we're talking about of being an intelligent crypto investor.
I think that's great. Gentlemen, is there anything that you want to leave us with?
I'll second John's kind of overarching approach of just like dispassionately executing, you know, your strategy, whatever that may be.
Did I say dispassionately? I was trying to be as passionate as possible about my argument.
Well, explaining your strategy is one thing.
Okay.
Good passion there. But the execution, I think that's where the emotions need to stay at the door. And I think you do a great job of explaining that. And you have a lot of the data to support that. So really good job.
Thank you.
Yep. I think we could definitely use more education, exactly sort of what you're trying to teach of how to go about investing in these types of assets in a thoughtful way. And so I appreciate what you're doing.
I appreciate what you guys are doing. Thank you for your service.
Well, thank you, everyone. I think that we can leave it there. For anyone who's curious, I highly recommend checking out The Intelligent Crypto Investor. John, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for the great conversation.
Crypto as an asset class is highly volatile, can become illiquid at any time, and is for investors with a high risk tolerance. Crypto may also be more susceptible to market manipulation than securities. Crypto is not insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation or the Securities Investor Protection Corporation. Investors in crypto do not benefit from the same regulatory protections applicable to registered securities. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. This podcast was produced by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology, also known as FCAT. FCAT does not offer digital assets nor provide clearing or custody of such assets. It is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide tax, legal, insurance, or investment advice, and should not be construed as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for any security or other asset by any Fidelity entity or third party. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at the time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of the authors and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. Fidelity and any other third parties mentioned in the podcast are independent entities and are not affiliated. Mentioning them does not suggest a recommendation or endorsement by Fidelity. This information is not intended for distribution to or use by any person or entity in any jurisdiction or country where such distribution or use would be contrary to local law or regulation. Persons accessing this information are required to inform themselves about and observe such restrictions. Third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. All others are the property of FMR LLC. Copyright 2026 FMR LLC. All rights reserved. 1040156.